Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you very much, and welcome to my daily 10-minute program here at Blog Talk Radio. This is your host, Chuck Morse. Well, yesterday was celebrated as Bastille Day by the French Republic and by good Frenchmen all around the world, apparently in New Orleans as well and in New York City. What is the significance of Bastille Day? Bastille Day has been misrepresented in history by the left, because the truth of the matter is that the French Revolution itself, which took place in 1789, occurred completely peacefully. There was not a single shot fired. What happened was that Louis XVI, who was dealing with an economic crisis in his country, there was a big inflation, partially because of the enormous amounts of money that he had loaned to the American Revolution. He called a General Assembly for the first time in 150 years, and thus, effectively, he accepted limited government. He accepted the beginnings of what would become a constitutional monarchy, or what he hoped would become a constitutional monarchy, and an elected body. The French people had been inspired by the United States. They had been inspired by the fact that Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, Benjamin Franklin had spent the American Revolutionary War years in Paris, where actually Jefferson advised the new General Assembly with regard to what would become a French constitution. They were inspired by the American people. They sent military aides over to help President George Washington, at the time General Washington, including his chief aide, Lafayette. The French Navy defeated the British in their only naval victory in history in the Battle of the Chesapeake off the coast of Virginia, which drove the British away, which tied the hands of General Cornwallis at Yorktown, leading to a victory by George Washington and victory for the American Republic in terms of stopping the British invasion. Louis XVI thus was a greatly admired figure in America, a celebrated figure. Cities and towns and streets were named after him, including Louisville, Kentucky. And the French people expected a revolution that would be American-inspired, that would result in a limited government, a constitution, a limited monarch who would be in place, in a proscribed context, not as an absolute ruler. But, of course, that's not what they got, because the radicals, operating secretly and in the underground, people who had been inspired by secret societies, such as the Illuminati, according to Abbé Bourriel, who wrote a three-volume book on the topic, and Scottish philosopher and economist and Professor John Robison, who wrote a book called Proofs of a Conspiracy, that the secret societies co-opted an American-inspired French Revolution 3 years later, starting with the Battle of the takeover of the Bastille, which was a publicity stunt. And in 1793, they installed what could be described as the world's first communist government, the Reign of Terror, under Robespierre and Danton. And, of course, that was, as would be every communist revolution, a reversion back to the ancient days when you'd had absolute power in the hands of an elite, a complete denial of God-given rights, all power coming from the state, the worship of the idol, except the idol is replaced by, quote, science, unquote. And thus you have a goose stepping into the past, really, and all marketed in pseudoscientific jargon to make it look like it was the future. The French Reign of Terror government was the most bloodthirsty and brutal government that the modern world had ever known. It was a fallback to the days of the ancient pharaoh. You had the guillotine flying and whizzing along 24 hours a day. You had the slaughter of tens of thousands of Catholic priests, of business people, all the stuff that happens in every communist revolution. It could have been Bolshevism, it could have been Pol Pot, it could have been Hitler for that matter. And you had a complete period of utter terror. They tried to do all the things that communists try to do. They tried to change reality. They abolished things like private property. They abolished the calendar. They replaced it with a new calendar. They tried to invent new days and remove any reference to a creator, as everyone would worship the elitist state. And, of course, the French Reign of Terror was finally met on the field of battle by the French people, who rose up, the Girondists, people of the countryside, small businessmen, farmers, peasants, Catholics, who rose up and they replaced Robespierre's government, sent them to the guillotine where they had belonged after they had already slaughtered upwards of hundreds of thousands of people. And they restored France to a certain degree. Now, the Constitution that had been inspired by Jefferson and by the American Republic, the radicals, the Jacobins, as they were called, they replaced it with one of the most radical documents ever. If you read it, it sounds just like the Communist Manifesto. We're going to redistribute the wealth. We're going to put our power in the hands of the police state, operating in the name of the people, and all of the rest. It goes right down the line. No. France was eventually fully restored in 1800 when Napoleon, the dictator, Napoleon embraced, I think it's safe to say, both the positive and negative elements of the French Revolution. I mean, on the one hand, he liberated peoples across Europe with American-inspired ideas in his Napoleonic Code of Law, basically leading to, an improvement in private enfranchisement of the middle class, of private ownership, of small business, of all the things that the Europeans wanted and sought as they looked across the Atlantic and saw the fantastic results of American freedom. And thus France experienced a restoration. That's not to say that there weren't lingering elements of course, the Communist Revolution. After the Thermidorian Restoration, the people rose up. Brief rebellion by a man by the name of Gracchus Babeuf. He went by the name of Gracchus, which was a pseudonym, and very similar in the tradition of Adam Weishaupt, the founder of the Illuminati, who renamed himself Spartacus. And he is credited with the first person to actually use the word communism. So you had thus the birth of communism in France, and that's why the left celebrates the French Revolution. Not the real French Revolution, which happened because the king stepped aside and created a National Assembly, and whether he wanted to or not, by the way, and started moving the country in the direction of freedom. But the reaction to that, the anti-American, anti-Western, anti-capitalist, anti-freedom reaction of the secret societies, often well-heeled and well-financed by aristocrats like the Duc d'Orléans, who wanted to restore their power. There's always been this strange and unholy alliance between the communist left and the aristocrats, you might notice. They don't generally criticize them. They were critical of the so-called bourgeoisie, who are actually people who are middle class, who are people who are trying to earn a buck, who are people who are trying to emerge and make something out of their lives. And so you have the battle between the real forces of freedom, which is what I would argue the French Revolution actually does stand for, and which the French Republic has embodied, and the radical French Revolution, which was a reaction, a co-opting, a reversal, a turning back. They turned back the clock to ancient times, except they marketed it in new clothing and chic-sounding language, and they sold it to unwitting people who would buy into this idea, both because they wanted to, they appealed to the better side of our nature. We can change the world. We can make perfection. We can create a new universe. But they also appealed subtly to fear and intimidation in that, look what happens to you if you don't go along with us. You'll get your head chopped off, just like tens of thousands of people did in Paris during that revolutionary time. The same dynamic exists today. Today, you get the rewards if you genuflect to the left. You get the better-looking girls when you're in college. You get the better jobs. You have a financial advantage because these people tend to dominate positions of power. And if you dare to stand up to them, if you dare to criticize them, if you dare to not conform, then you see them. You see how people are punished. Right now in this country, we don't hear too much of that because the left is dominating. They're winning. They have the high ground with Barack Obama in the White House. They got their treaty with Iran, which is going to give their beloved third world country a nuclear bomb, creating a new dialectic. They have millions of people being paid not to work. They have government by nanny state regulation, their fantasy of national socialism. So why rock the boat? Right now you don't see people being demonized. You see a little scorn thrown at people who might slightly demonstrate some conservative values. But for the most part, they're being ignored. But watch out if someone starts to get traction. They're not going to attack them on the field of ideas. They're not going to discuss issues on their merits. They're going to use scorn and hatred and destruction. Just anyone who remembers the George W. Bush years knows what I'm talking about. Anyway, I want to thank you for listening this afternoon to my 10 minutes, my 10-minute rant, if you will. My books are available at Amazon or Amazon Kindle. Just put my name in the server, Chuck Morse, M-O-R-S-E, and up they come. And, of course, my YouTube of Chuck Morse Television is available at YouTube. And if you'd like to get this program delivered directly to you every day, subscribe to it through Blog Talk Radio or through the blog site. Anyway, thanks so much, everyone, and have a nice day.